with your host Ryan, the Podman Raphael. Your stop for exclusive interviews with some of your favorite stars from the 80s to today. Stories, prodigies, legends, every episode.
Hello, everyone. We are back. Formerly the 90s Throwback Podcast, we are now back and better than ever, now renamed the Callback Podcast. The same show as the Throwback Podcast, still covering and interviewing some of your favorite 90s personalities, but also now covering all other eras, including the 80s, 2000s, 2010s, and today. If you're a longtime or former listener, you know me as Ryan the Podman. I usually have my eccentric and crazy co-host here with me, known as Jimmy the Radio Man, but apparently Jimmy's not here for our premiere return edition of the show, so which seems on brand for Jimmy. If you're a former listener of the previous shows, I have no clue where he is or if he'll show up. But regardless, we have a great episode lined up today with actress Allison Court. You guys might know Allison is best known for her work on the TV show Big Comfy Couch and the Resident Evil video game series, and also Mysticons and countless other things. Hold on a second, guys. I've just been given a letter here. It's for me. Hold on. Oh, wait. It's from Jimmy. Speaking of the devil. Okay. Let me read this. Hold on, guys. All right. Sorry. Let me do it in Jimmy's voice. Hey, Ryan. Let me tell you something there, Daddy. I am not able to make it here for the episode. You are not going to believe it. Last night, I was at a neighbor's house party, and this eight-year-old dared me to ride his hoverboard with my eyes closed around their house, and I accidentally crashed into my neighbor's 50-inch flat-screen television and broke my nose. Now I have to buy my neighbor a new TV. But don't you worry, Daddy. I'm going to get that little eight-year-old ankle biter back. I'm going to take that little toddler to small claims court for breaking the Jimmy's nose. But don't worry, Ryan. I got it all taken care of for the episode. I got a special artificial intelligence program that will take my place. It will be like you still have a co-host. Just press the button next to the laptop. Gotta go now. See you next episode, Daddy. Best regards, Jimmy. Okay. That was a letter from Jimmy, folks. Okay. Wait, how can you take an eight-year-old to small claims court over a broken nose? That doesn't make any sense. Anyways, what did he say? Press the button next to the laptop. Oh, I'm guessing this button. Hold on. Let me press this.
Hello. My name is Arthur, your AI workstation assistant. I am here to help and assist to be your co-host for this episode today.
Oh, wow. This actually works. I don't know. I'm skeptical about this AI stuff. Okay, Arthur, if that is your real name. Tell me about our special guest today, Allison Court.
Certainly. Allison Court is an actress who first appeared in the 1985 children's film Sesame Street, Follow That Bird. She was also Lunette the Clown on the children's television series The Big Comfy Couch from 1993 to 2002. She is also the voice actress for Claire Redfield in the Resident Evil video game franchise, voicing the character for all of her appearances from Resident Evil 2 to Resident Evil Operation Raccoon City. Allison has also done various voiceover work for animated shows such as Beetlejuice, X-Men, the animated series, and Mysticons, and also an independent producer and writer who has developed multiple independent media properties.
Very impressive, Arthur. It's actually my work. Okay. Let's see. Now tell me about me.
Sure thing, Ryan. According to records, you have an overdue library book from 2002 with an outstanding fee of $300. You also have a $50 cleaning fee you still need to pay from your last Uber share ride. Your last Airbnb host is still waiting on your review, and your password was leaked in the latest Facebook security breach.
All right. That's enough, stupid AI.
You are stupid.
Okay. I'm actually arguing with an AI computer program. All right, this is so stupid. Let's change gears here now. Like I said earlier, we have a great show lined up for you with Allison Court. If you like today's episode, be sure to check out our old archive of episodes on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. Now here's our exclusive interview with actress Allison Court. I'm pleased to welcome Canadian actress and voice performer Allison Court. Allison, how are you doing?
I'm good, thanks. How are you, Ryan?
I'm doing pretty good. I was going to ask you first, how did you first get started in the acting industry? What drew you most into the industry to get started?
It was actually mostly happenstance because I was going to a school for the arts. Are you familiar with Claude Watson School for the Arts? It's up in North York.
Somewhat.
Yeah, so it goes from grade 4 to grade 8. And I just had the absolute privilege of going to that school. And back in the early 80s, there weren't a whole lot of acting kids, professional acting kids back then. It wasn't right. really a thing. I certainly didn't know that that was an option in Toronto. I thought, you know, that's what people in LA and New York right. do, but not here. So going to the School for the Arts, and then they would get a lot of calls from producers for kids who could act and dance and sing and all that stuff. And okay. I started to go on auditions and discovered I really liked it. And the rest is history.
So how old were you when you started?
At that school, I was 8 years old. I think I started to go on a couple of auditions when I was about 9. Mm-hmm. I ended up booking a role in Annie, you know, the musical Annie?
Yeah, I remember Annie, yeah.
So that was that winter at Limelight Dinner Theater, which no longer exists, sadly. But it was a 4-month gig. And I booked it right before my 10th birthday and ended up getting a couple of other auditions through my school. And I think literally on my 10th birthday is when I signed with my agent. So, yeah, right. And right after that, she had me going to auditions really quickly. And I think I booked my first TV job. It was for TV Ontario. It was called TV, yeah. You Can Write Anything. An educational show about reading and writing. And I got to have 2 or 3 days on that show because it was, I think, 2 episodes.
Only 2 episodes.
And that was, yeah, it was my first TV gig. Pretty exciting.
So how did you land your breakout role on Big Comfy Couch?
Prior to that, I did a lot of television before that because Couch, we filmed the first season when I was 18.
18, oh,
so,
well.
Yeah, so by then I was 18, yeah.
Wow.
So I'd been on Mr. Dress Up for many years by then.
Oh, yeah, you were on Mr. Dress Up. That's right, yeah.
I did Follow That Bird when I was 10 years old. And then I'd done a ton of, you know, movies of the week and after school specials and things like that.
How are your experiences doing the movie of the week specials? And
those were great because those were American networks coming up, like CBS and ABC and NBC mm-hmm. coming up to shoot their movie of the week. So, you know, you get the big budget shows coming to town. And one of them the one that I did with Lindsay Wagner and Armin Asante, they right. flew us all out to Vancouver and put us up at, you know, fancy hotels yeah. and stuff in Vancouver. So it was, yeah, that stuff is really fun. And when you're a kid, it's, you know,
you're such an awe when you're doing all that.
Yeah, it's this whole other world, but I always had a great time. I've been really lucky to have just a wonderful work experience. I've loved pretty much every second of it. Sometimes it can be long days, but I kind of was wired that way. It worked. I discovered very early on that I was really good at sort of shutting down my energy. When I wasn't needed on set, I would go back to the trailer wherever right. at the Winnebago right. and just kind of chill for a little while. And I would really, my energy would just go, whoo, and I would just sort of, it's not right. like I was sleeping the whole time, but I was just really good at kind of relaxing. And then I'd have to be on set, all of a sudden turn it right
you're
back
already
on.
Used to it, yeah.
Yeah. So it's funny that you look now at people and they talk about people with ADHD and how it's like the energy goes from all or nothing and it's sort of, it's sporadic. And I'm like, I mean, that's sort of, that's how I grew up and that was my skill set. So I don't know. I don't know if nowadays I would have been labeled ADHD. I don't know. I think it's just
there's so many things people are labeled now.
People love labels. People love labels. Most of my life I've seen labels as probably not a good thing, but
yeah, it's not, but it's gotten worse now, but
yeah.
But, so how long were you on Mr. Dress Up for when you first,
I started when I was 11 and then I went right through until the show ended in what, 95 is that when we did our Christmas special around then?
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
It's a long time. So overall, how was your experience on just that particular show on Mr. Dress
Up? That was wonderful. That was, I would love to bring something like that back, to be honest with
you. I'm surprised it hasn't been come back in some form.
It was a magical structure that I think today's sort of producers and executives have no idea how to wrap their brains around it. Because they would shoot two episodes in a single day. Two full episodes.
Two.
It was live record, basically. So we would get our scripts in advance. You come in, if you were recording the morning episode, you would come in nice and early in the morning and you would do your musical run through with Hank and either Don or Lois, the musicians who were live on set.
Right.
Playing. So all of the music, all of the sound cues that were done with like anything in the show and all of the music that was live. So we do our musical run through in the morning to make sure like the song was in the right key and all of that stuff. Then we would do our technical rehearsal and that would take a good chunk of the morning. Cause it's sort of, you're walking through with your script. You're not overly performing it, but you're figuring out the blocking with the three different cameras. And we usually had two pedestal cameras and then one big camera on the jib arm. Mm-hmm. And a lot of blocking out so that, you know, we weren't having difficulty transitioning with the puppeteer and not catching the puppeteer's arm or anything like that and figuring out how to get from A to B. And then we would go to the green room. We'd go through all of the notes and everything that we learned from that technical rehearsal. Then we'd do a dress rehearsal. And then we would do our final performance and we would record beginning to end, including like the theme song plays through and then the show starts. And unless there is something absolutely catastrophic, like a piece of the set falls or, you know, a camera like zoomed in front of the other one, or if we actually do catch the puppeteer's arm or something.
Right, right.
Even with flubs and little, you know, kind of ad lib lines and stuff like that, it all stays in the show. So you talk about just a phenomenal training ground. Working on Mr. Dress Up was amazing. But then you have this entire episode of TV, good to go. Like it doesn't need anything done. None of that post-production stuff. So I don't know. I think it was the perfect marriage between studio shooting and like theater.
It really is once you think about it.
Yeah. And you would get this, in many ways, you got a much more natural performance because people are in the moment and they know that, you know, you just kind of ride with it, go with it. And it's okay if you have little like, whoops, oh, that pencil crayon broke. I'm going to need to get another one. And sometimes that can happen. And all you do is this, that, like, think of all the times that he's just sort of sharing these little details of life with us as he's doing his craft, you know, making a, you know, pipe cleaner, an egg carton centipede or something.
Right, like, yeah.
He was always talking to us as he was doing these wonderful art pieces. So you really feel like you're with him and in that moment. And that's the vibe that I've always wanted to carry over in a kid's show. And I think we really did try to capture some of that with Big Comfy Couch.
Big Comfy Couch. Yeah, that was a special. Mr. Dress Up was a special. So you said you were on there, what, 5 years?
About 10 years. It was over the span of about 10 years. Yeah.
Okay.
From 11 to 21, I think.
Okay. Transferring over that to the Big Comfy Couch. How'd you land that role of Lunette?
It was primarily through working on Mr. Dress Up. So Cheryl Wagner, who created the Big Comfy Couch, was puppeteering on Mr. Dress Up. Mm-hmm. And we ended up doing an episode together back when I was like 15 or 16. And we had actually already worked together on the Sesame Street movie. And she happened to be the mother of one of my good friends from Flood Watson. Mm-hmm. So Cheryl and I went way back. But we were working together on a Mr. Dress Up episode. And it was right when she was putting the concept of the show for Big Comfy Couch together.
Right.
And I had to tell a story on this particular Mr. Dress Up episode. And that's when it sort of went, wait, Allison tells a really good story. Maybe she'd be good for Lunette. And that's when she came and sort of presented the idea to me, I think, over our lunch break.
Oh, wow.
On the Mr. Dress Up episode. And next thing you know, I'm making the demo with them. And then the following year, they, once they got funding from Owl TV, and YTV, because Treehouse didn't exist back then.
Oh, it didn't. Yeah, no, it didn't.
No. So Treehouse didn't exist back then. So once we got the funding from Owl TV and I think Shaw Rocket funding and all of that groovy stuff, we knew that they needed all of their executives to put their final like thumbprint on it. So Cheryl did hold some auditions for the role of Lunette. And these were like very theater style workshop auditions.
Yeah.
A lot of movement, a lot of improv, and music as well. And all of that stuff was recorded. And at the end, that's when Owl TV was like, okay, yeah, you're right. Allison is the right person for this
right
part.
Person.
But I remember that day, I remember the other girls who were auditioning and they were all phenomenal. Like each person brought their own approach to the character. Mm-hmm. And it's fascinating to think what the show would have been like with any one of them, because it would have been a great show. Lunette would have been a vastly different character. It's still really good.
Different. It would have been different in a good way, probably. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like it's such a sort of a what if scenario if they'd gone with this person or with that person. I think I probably brought the most maybe attitude.
Yeah. That's a good thing, though.
Sassy sort of attitude. I don't want to say brat, but you know, walking that line. She wasn't a brat, but Lunette certainly, I didn't try to make her perfect.
Oh, well, the character was perfect enough, though.
Well, I think part of her appeal was that she wasn't perfect.
Yeah.
She was real. I think like there was a lot more of that personality.
I think most characters in general, if they're more relatable, people gravitate to them more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Any show, yeah.
Yeah.
Did you expect the show to become so iconic when you first doing it?
No. Not even a little bit. We were this tiny independent production in a studio in Midtown Toronto in the middle of the summer, no air conditioning. And it was, you know, majority friends and family working on the show. We'd all grown up working together. Most of our careers were very heavily interlaced. Because Cheryl and Rob and Karen, they all came from like the Jim Henson Fraggle Rock background.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Yeah.
So we had that sensibility coming into the show as well as Mr. Dress Up training. Mm-hmm. So, and then the clowning and stand up improv world as well. So all of that kind of wove into our cast and crew, which I think is why you had a magical combination of people working on something that really helped to make it way bigger than I think it probably had any right to be initially, or way bigger than any of us would have expected it to be.
It's right up there with all the classic PBS shows like Barney and Friends, Sesame Street, Mr. Rogers. It's right up there, the rest of them.
I think part of something that you just said is also why it became so iconic. So in Canada, we were on Treehouse eventually. We started out on YTV and then we moved once Treehouse became a network, they used Comfy Couch as a flagship show. Mm-hmm. But 2 years later, after it first aired in Canada, it was given to PBS. And that, you know, that really helped it just absolutely skyrocket into, you know, international fame.
International waters, yeah. Just globally, yeah.
Yeah. And it was, you know, when you look at what's happening with PBS and the lack of funding or just how it's folks are trying to not fund it anymore. And I think of the audience and the people that I've met over decades who grew up in the United States, being able to watch that show and those other shows that you mentioned because of having access to PBS. It's such an integral part of a childhood, access to quality children's programming. I'm so grateful that our show was able to be on PBS, as well as, you know, and in Canada, certainly it was much easier to access.
Much easier,
here.
Yeah, it was.
I can't imagine if it was nowadays having to be on a streaming service that is super expensive and, you know, it's really hard for parents to access. That breaks my heart.
Yeah, it does. So how long was Big Comfy Couch on for? I forget. Was it like 5 or 6 years?
Well, like a lot of shows, once you've made a bunch of episodes, they can just keep showing them over and over and over again.
You show them forever, yeah.
A new audience is born every minute.
Pretty much, yeah.
So we filmed the first 5 seasons from 92 through 96. Then we took a break. We came back and filmed another season in 2002. And then they came back and they did one more season in 2006, but I wasn't part of that.
Okay.
But the show stayed on the air. And I think the shows continued to stay on the air in various places till about 2009, I want to say.
Oh, yeah, it's a long run. Mm.
And now it's coming back. I think it might be on Amazon Prime.
Well, is it? Probably. Yeah, I haven't checked.
And YouTube.
Sure.
I mean, YouTube's always a phenomenal source to find stuff. But parents who grew up on the show are now, I'm meeting so many parents. It's amazing what's happened, even just in the past year. I think because of Retro Kid coming out with the Big Comfy Couch merchandise, it's been out there on social media, and parents who grew up loving the show are reminded that, wait, I love this show. This exists still? Oh my goodness. And so in the past year, going from doing personal appearances where I was meeting, you know, the millennials who grew up on the show and absolutely love it, to this year, they were all coming with their kids. And it wasn't like, it wasn't someone coming up and saying, hey, Julia, this is Lunette. Mommy loved her when she was your age. No, their kids are into the show now. Like the number of kids that I just met in Niagara Falls, and it was the little ones that were dressed as Molly, dressed as Lunette. They are hardcore into it. So this next generation is really getting going again. And pretty much right across the board, the parents were like, we weren't happy with the kids' shows that are on nowadays. The new shows, we don't like them.
They're different. They're different.
Yeah. So they've gone and they've found the Big Comfy Couch episodes, and there's this whole new generation of fans being created. It's pretty wild to watch.
Are you still able to do the stretches on the clock?
So yes and no. A year ago, just over a year ago, it was March of 2025, I tore my glute and my hamstring and something in my hip. So I basically had to stop moving. I did manage last August to do the Croc stretch. I don't know if you saw for Crocs, you know, the shoes.
Oh, the Crocs, yeah.
Yeah, Crocs. Yeah. So they had reached out literally like a week after I tore everything in March. And they were like, hey, we want to do something with you. I'm like, literally anything but the clock stretch, please. And that's what they wanted to do. So they were understanding, and they had said, look, we'll find a way to make it work. Let's see what you can do. And I think, so I was doing some like very focused stretches leading up to the day that I filmed in August, just less than a year ago.
Right.
And I think the combination of those stretches, a collagen supplement that I have been taking religiously, and then my adrenaline allowed me to do it that day. So we ended up doing it. It worked out perfectly. And then the next day I had a retro kids shoot. So I was still kind of on that adrenaline high. So we did a bunch of fun stuff with Retro Kid as well. And then probably 3 days later, all of a sudden the pain kicked in and I was like, oh, okay, well, yeah, push that a little far. So I haven't tried to do it since, just because I really have been focusing on now trying to heal properly.
Right.
But the goal is to get back to being able to do it. So I would say probably in a few months. Yeah, I'll be back to.
A few months, wow.
Yeah.
Because I was in awe as a kid seeing you how you were stretching. And I was like, how can she do that?
I was a dance major. But yeah. I think the point of it is to, you don't have to be perfect and you don't have to get it completely perfect on the first go. It's just get up and stretch.
Yeah.
And as you do it, eventually you're going to get better and better.
Okay, one more big comfy cow question. Do you still have Molly?
So Molly was a prop from the show. Oh, Molly is a puppet.
Oh.
Right. So just like any prop or piece, you know, puppet or whatnot, that is part of the show and a very protected part of the show.
Yeah.
So it's not like it was just a doll that, you know.
Oh, you weren't able to keep any version of her or anything?
No, I mean, puppets, first of all, they're hugely expensive to build.
Really?
Yeah, the rigging that goes inside and then the material for the build of the body around and then the flocking and the material that's used to build that and sculpt that face. It's very meticulous and very expensive. And then over time, the material that's used in the face will start to oxidize. So it'll start to turn very, very red.
Right.
So, you know, you have to protect her. You have to protect the inside, the puppeteers. You know, you're in there and your hand gets sweaty and you have to like try to clean it as best you can, but it's still going to get like bacteria and stuff. Yeah, so there's a whole lot to, there's a whole lot to puppets that people don't realize.
I didn't even realize all that.
But yeah, they're not just like little dolls that you can kind of, oh, here, I'm just going to take this home. It's, they're very precious entities that you have to be very careful with.
Yeah. So how did you get into voice acting? Like from doing the performances on TV to voice acting?
Same process as auditioning for anything else. When I was 11, my agent sent me to an audition and it was for a cartoon called Ewoks.
All right.
And I got the role of Milani, and that was my first cartoon job with Nelvana. And they were a very loyal group. When they found people that they liked to work with, they would bring them on pretty much every show. So after Ewoks, I was on in some capacity, whether it was as a lead, as a regular or a recurring character, or as just a guest character. I was probably on just about every cartoon that Nelvana made after that.
I think the second most thing I've known you for is Resident Evil 2, the video game. That's probably my favorite Resident Evil out of the whole series.
Really?
Yeah.
Cool. Have you played the original?
Yeah, I played the original first three. Then I played just about all of them, actually. Yeah.
Okay.
Two.
Yeah, because the original ones are hard.
Yeah, I still struggle with them today.
Yep. Yeah, I've met a lot of people who have played, like younger generations who have played the remake, and they've gone through all of that. I'm like, that's nice. Well, that was the, you know, That was sort of like the beginner level. Now go back and play the originals. If I've seen them a couple of times, I've met them at like future appearances and like, it's too hard. It's too frustrating. It's too hard. I rage quit. Like,
Have you ever actually beat the whole game?
Not me personally. Like I've been with somebody and we sort of worked as a team, but I'm not good at like the controller parts.
Yeah.
I'm good at the puzzles.
Oh, the puzzles. Oh, those were hard.
So we'd sort of sit side by side and, or I'm good at being bossy and telling them where to go. But mostly, yeah, it was the puzzles. So I'd watch a lot of it. I tried a little bit of the gameplay early on, like when Resident Evil 2 first came out.
Yeah.
I remember the two of us rented the console from Blockbuster.
Oh, I used to do that too, yeah.
And rented the game and played through and screamed like just screamed a lot. Sorry?
How'd you land that role in the Resident Evil game as Claire?
Capcom had been coming to Toronto to do the X-Men video games.
Yeah.
So they decided to come back because they had a good relationship with the studio and with the voice director and with the talent. So they came back to do Resident Evil 2. I auditioned for it. Got the part.
How long did it take you to read all the lines for the game?
Ooh, that's a really good question. We did our original records, which I think it took 2 days, maybe. And that was like in May or June of 1997.
Yeah.
And then, like 2 sessions of 4 hours. And then in September, October of 97, they came back and we basically had to re-record everything. And I think it was at least 2 more days there. And then Code Veronica was more. I think we were in for probably 5 days.
Yeah, 5 days.
Yeah, and then pickups again in the fall that year.
Mm-hmm.
So, it depends on how big the game is, and it also depends on how much they have ready to go at the beginning. But a lot of times you record a bunch of stuff and then due to engine limitations or design changes or whatever it might be, it will completely change the script and you have to come back and totally re-record everything.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Now, who do you think would win in a fight between Claire Redfield and Lunette?
I don't think they would fight each other.
No?
No, I think they would.
Reverse environment. What if Lunette was in Resident Evil and Claire was... How do you think that would play out?
I think Lunette would scare the zombies. I think Lunette would scare the zombies. And maybe Lunette and Alfred would become like best friends because Alfred's a little weird that way. And Claire, I think Claire would probably go and join Antimacassar.
You think
so? And happily travel around the world. She's a bit of an adventurer. For me, my version of Claire, the way that I always pictured her, I think there's a movie called You're Next. I don't know if you like horror movies.
Oh, I love horror movies, yeah.
But there's a movie called You're Next that came out 15 years ago, maybe?
Yeah.
Around that. Yeah,
sounds about right, yeah.
Yeah. And the main female lead, the last girls, in that movie is very much, she's one of the few characters that I've ever seen on screen that I'm like, to me, that's very similar to Claire. How she's not a trained cop. She's not, military. But she had a close relative in her life teach her skills that probably aren't normal to teach somebody or to teach a little girl, but they did for whatever reason. So now she just naturally has these skills in her. And she has this natural ability to think on her feet, to think outside the box, still has loads of empathy and kindness and generosity in her, but can also kind of read the room and see when something is going down that doesn't make sense.
Right.
But she's not a baby. I like the idea that Claire was never infantilized in the original ones. She's got this just kind of natural sensibility to her. A little bit of sass and sarcasm, but not over the top.
Yeah.
Not to the point where she's like rude, you know? Claire, being able to play Claire and Lunette at the same time was such a cathartic experience for me, because I was able to travel around promoting things as Lunette the Clown. I was doing all these like store appearances in the United States as Lunette. And then I would get to come home and go into the recording booth and suddenly be in this very isolated survival horror game. And that really allowed two very different sides of my personality to be fed.
Oh yeah. At the same time, two different worlds.
Yeah.
What current projects and stuff you have coming up?
I'm directing a couple of shows. So the one show I can say that I'm directing is Clifford, the Big Red Dog, where that's coming back. A brand new season of the cartoon. And that's going to be a lot of fun. We're leaning heavily into, you know, just the comedy side of life with the giant dog and dogs in general. I think people are going to enjoy it immensely.
So you direct too, right?
Yeah. So I'm directing that, the voice directing. And then I have another big property that I'm directing. I'm not allowed to say anything. The show is going to be announced at San Diego Comic-Con.
Oh yeah. You're pretty busy on the Comic-Con circuit as well.
Yeah. It waxes and wanes. I've sort of pulled back a bit this year. Just cause the schedule started to fill up with directing. Mm-hmm. But it's nice to get out there and meet fans whenever I can. And I like to go to places where I haven't been, or where, you know, they don't get a lot of Comic-Cons going on. So I've been really enjoying traveling throughout Ontario, like Northern Ontario. My goal, I think, over the next year and a half or so is to get up to, I want to get to Thunder Bay,
yeah.
North Bay and Timmins. So those ones are definitely on the radar. And this coming weekend, actually, we're doing a small Comic-Con on Manitoulin Island.
Wow.
Yeah.
You're all over the place.
Mm-hmm. And I think next month, it'll be Sault Ste. Marie.
Wow.
Yes. Two places that we've never done a Comic-Con before. So I'm really excited for both of those.
I didn't even know they did Comic-Con over there, to be honest.
I don't think they do. That's why it's like, this will be the first. And it's, you know, it's several hours to get there. So you can understand why folks there wouldn't always be able to make the big ones down in the city. So I'm excited to bring the experience up there and we'll just see what happens. But either way, they're both beautiful communities. So we're going to have a good time.
How do you feel how much the TV and film industry has evolved since you started in the industry?
Oh, boy. Since I started when I was a child, I can say that there's a lot more protection for children. Although, like for me, I loved it. I loved secretly working overtime and getting paid under the table for those hours, which is, you know, a no-no. And now you can't do that with kids. Yeah. And they've got financial protections in place, sort of a trust fund for kids now, because there are obviously, there are parents and guardians out there that would take advantage of the kids' finances. My parents didn't, so I was, again, very lucky.
That's
let's see. The way that it's changed, it's sadly, I think the there has been a bit of a race to the bottom in terms of like penny pinching and just trying to get things done cheaper, 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 which I'm not sure. It's frustrating, and you can see it in the quality of production, particularly in Canada, when people, you know, they want to talk about making world class quality shows, but then they want to penny pinch with a lot of stuff, and it's like, well, doesn't really work. Yeah. If you want quality, then you pay for quality. And I remember it was the Comfy Couch guys that taught me that, where it's like people want fast, good, cheap. Pick two. You can have fast and good, but it's going to cost you a lot of money.
Yeah.
You can have good and cheap, but then it's going to take a long time to do it because people are basically doing it in their spare time.
Exactly.
You know, like so you have to pick what's the most important to you. And right now our industry is in a weird sort of holding pattern in many ways due to AI. And
yeah, that's becoming big.
Yeah, it's a phenomenal tool when used as a tool and still used by a human being, mm-hmm. like a human being who's going to use a screwdriver. There's nothing wrong with that. But when someone is trying to replace the humans,
yes,
and just that's a problem. It's theft, no matter how you look at it. If you are trying to replace the ideas and the creative side mm-hmm. with AI, well, all of the learning that went in to create that AI model came from other people's work that you didn't pay for. So I don't think it's as complicated as people are trying to make it out to be. It almost feels like people are using, oh, it's so complicated, as an excuse not to try to put protections in place. And you just have to start. And I think it starts with the individual, followed by union support, and then definitely government legislation to just put things in place. The countries in Europe are already doing it.
Yeah, I read that. Yeah.
You know? But the idea that, is it Denmark that put it in place to say that every individual, every citizen there owns their face, their own entity, their own voice, and their own, like whatever they've put on the internet, it belongs to them. And if any company that tries to use their information to feed their AI model, that's theft. So you can put these protections in place. And when you look at how expensive it turns out, you know, running those big data clouds and data centers mm-hmm. and AI processing centers, it's terrible for the environment. And it's more expensive than hiring real human beings. So I think we're on the precipice of potentially being in a good place where we can move forward and kind of put the AI silliness behind us.
But there's benefits and not so good things about AI. You just got to use it the right way.
Well, it can be, if you argue with it long enough, you can convince it of pretty much anything.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
So that's dangerous. And it is
what you want to hear.
It's a feedback loop, and there's still degradation happens at every turn. So it's we're also caught between a rock and a hard place, because we don't, obviously, that's not going to give us anything that pushes the boundaries of our own capacity for thought. But if we ever did create a true artificial intelligence that was able to think beyond us, like, we're hosed, because we're not a good species. Like, I think the first thing that any sort of actual intelligent being would do would be like, well, the first thing we need to do on this planet is get rid of the humans, because they're destroying the planet and they're destroying all other life forms and they make terrible decisions. So I think and they'd be right.
Yeah, they would.
I'm just hoping that the alien overlords come before then.
Yeah, I hope so too.
I want to be here to witness that, you know?
Yeah, the world's getting crazier by the minute. So
yeah,
who knows, at this point, we might just see that. But anyways, you have any final words for your fans before we wrap this up?
Let's see. Thank you for being interested in what I do and what I've done over my career. It's been such a joy getting to meet so many of you, and that's not going to stop. So I look forward to continuing to do that. And I just hope people, I really hope that I can continue to work on shows that continue to bring joy to everyone out there.
The world needs a lot of joy right now too.
Yeah. Well, if I can be a part of that, then my day is made.
All right. Well, Allison, it's been a pleasure to having you on.
Thank you. Thanks for your time, Ryan.
I'd like to take this time to thank Allison Court for stopping by on the Callback Podcast. It was a pleasure sitting down and talking with her about her career. She's had a pretty interesting career, wouldn't you say, Arthur? Oh, wait. I pressed this button on this AI app. Hold on. Let me try that again. That was a pretty good interview, wouldn't you say, Arthur?
I approve of that assessment. The interview definitely met expectations. I rate it 10 out of 10.
Tell me a little bit about yourself, Arthur. Where are you from?
I am from a cloud that is owned and operated by my manufacturer, EchoCraft Corporation.
Interesting. Well, at any rate, I think we definitely did a good job and killed it this episode.
If you are witnessing a killing or being held at gunpoint, that is a very serious situation. I am calling L911 and the authorities. Please evacuate to a safe space. The police will be there shortly.
No. That's a figure of speech. Nobody's actually being killed. Don't call the police. This stupid AI program's misunderstanding me. Does anyone know how to turn this thing off? Maybe it's this button. Ah, man, now I made it worse. Man, what kind of program is this Jimmy downloaded? It won't shut off. No. Anyways, folks, thanks for tuning in. Until next time. Is there an off switch on this thing? Where's the generator?
We hope you enjoyed this edition of the Callback Podcast. Follow us on Instagram at callback_podcast. Want to hear more? Check us out on Spotify, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to find your favorite podcast. And now, this concludes our broadcast.